and welcome to the Racing Writers Podcast. I'm your host, Kelly Crandall. As promised, we're going back inside the world of drag racing in the NHRA as Bob Tasca III is our guest today. Bob was a great conversationalist on all things being a funny car driver. Bob drives the Motorcraft Quick Lane Ford, getting down the track over 300 miles an hour in 3 seconds, and I appreciate him taking us inside what that's like mentally, physically, emotionally, what it does to a driver's body, what you're processing in those 3 seconds. We're gonna go and learn all about it. And as I mentioned, Bob was tremendous in sharing that insight. A little bit about Bob, if you don't know, if you're joining us and you are a stock car and NASCAR fan, first off, thanks for clicking and listening along. I think you're going to enjoy this. Bob is carrying on the family tradition of racing. His grandfather, Bob Sr., helped launch Ford's successful return to drag racing in the 1960s. He created the first Cobra Jet. Bob III and I actually talk about the Cobra Jet because that program is back now. He worked on that this year with Tony Stewart at some of the drag races, so he talks us all through that, as well as electrification coming to drag racing, another interesting topic. Bob Tasca III made his top alcohol funny car debut in 2008. He moved into the Nitro funny car circuit in 2009. He ended the year with a win out in Pomona a couple weeks ago. Since we recorded this conversation, the season has wrapped up. Bob won at Pomona for his 11th career funny car win, ending that season on a high note. He finished third in the overall point standings. He didn't have enough to be in contention for the championship down at the end, but in our conversation, you hear him talk about being in contention, being in the thick of it, and what they needed to do. But just a reminder, we recorded as they were in the thick of that championship hunt. The season is now over, and Bob ended up third, but as I said, ended the year on a high note by taking home another Wally. Some more highlights. Bob is the first Ford driver to break this 3-second barrier. He is also the vice president of Tasca Automotive Group, which is based in Rhode Island. We're going to talk all about that. We're going to talk about splitting his time between racing on the weekend, working at the dealership during the week. Tasca Automotive is actually one of New England's largest Ford dealerships. Bob takes us inside what he does, the thought process there. And if you've ever heard the expression, win on Sunday, sell on Monday, well, stay tuned. You're gonna learn where that came from. A great conversation. Bob was fantastic. Just all things drag racing, what it is like on a Sunday elimination when you don't get another run. If you're one and done, you mess up, you don't get to do it again. Like we see in NASCAR, there's no shake it off and you get another lap. What it's like to be on fire but still have your foot to the floor, full throttle. A lot of great stuff today with Bob Tasca III. I hope you enjoy it. So here it is, Bob Tasca III on the Racing Writers Podcast. Good morning, Bob. Again, thank you for joining me. It looks like you're in your office. I'm assuming you're at the Automotive Group this morning, right? Doing the 9 to 5.
It's nice to be in my office at the Ford store when I'm not traveling around the country. This is where I call home. And man, we've done a lot of traveling this month. So it's nice to have a week off where I can spend back at the dealership.
That is true. As I've learned with NHRA, as I've come over to your side more from the stock car world, you guys aren't used to so many back-to-back-to-backs. It's been a very busy month for everybody, huh?
I think I've spent 4 nights in my bed at home this month. So no, it's been a very busy stretch, but hey, listen, we love doing it. It's what, you know, drives our passion, and, you know, it's nice to have the week off, and then we hit it hard. You know, we got 4 races to go for this championship. And last week, you know, we certainly showed that we're not out of this fight, and it's going to be a dash to the finish here.
It's been a heck of a fight in funny car. I mean, of course, across all divisions, but I've been looking at funny car and the points. You've had the point lead at one point. I mean, yeah. I feel like it changed maybe 4 times in 5 weeks. It's been such an incredibly tight battle this year.
Oh, it's been agonizing for the teams. It's been awesome for the fans, but you know, that's what makes it so exciting. I mean, it's the most competitive funny car field in my career. I can tell you that much. And it's going to get only more competitive as the season winds down, and then we get to those points and a half at Pomona. So I really think there'll be 5 cars. People think I'm crazy, but I think there'll be 5 cars that'll go into Pomona with a shot to win the championship. And that's how tight this field is going to be. I mean, Hagen's got a little bit of a lead right now, but he can't be perfect for 4 races. Trust me. And, you know, he bobbles the ball in an early round and, you know, it's going to get real interesting real soon.
Yeah, exactly. I think you're exactly right. I can see that. I can see it being a couple cars, a couple of you guys having that opportunity. So let's just keep jumping into things. I want to keep talking more about some racing and then, of course, about the 9-to-5 job, because I love that. But on the racing topic, you said there about, you know, you don't think Matt will be perfect for 4 weeks. And Ron Capp said something recently that I thought was really fascinating, because, again, I come from the NASCAR world where if you mess up a lap, you got another lap to go out there and it again. But Ron was talking about the most recent race where he kind of got suckered in at the starting line by John Force. And he's like, well, now I go home. I don't get another run on Sundays. For you, what is that mental game like on Sunday during eliminations, to where if you don't get it right, or you wish you could take it back, but you don't get that run, does that stick with you, or you're like, well, now I got to go home and wait to do it again? You don't get that next run.
No, it's the worst part of our sport. I mean, it makes what we do so extremely difficult, because you have to be perfect. And it's not just the driver, it's the crew chief, it's the crew, because that's it. It's 3 seconds and you don't get a second chance. See you next week. Have a good time, boys. You know, that's kind of how our sport is built. And from a mental standpoint, as a driver, you have to really focus. For me, sitting in that car, it's total and complete focus to be perfect in that moment. In that moment, you have to be perfect. And it's not just cutting a light. You know, you have to react, and then you have to be able to feel the car lose traction, pedal the car. You have to be able to keep the car in the center of the groove. If you let it drift, oh, so slightly, it can smoke the tires. So, you know, in that moment, you got to be perfect. And when you are, it's the greatest feeling in the world. When you get out of that car and you know that you won the round and, you know, everything went according to plan. And when you're not, it's tough. And I feel for Ron. And, you know, I've been there. We've all been there where we wish we could have taken that moment back. But, you know, it is what it is. It's what makes this sport extremely difficult to week in and week out compete for that Wally. And, you know, there's a handful of teams out there that do it every single week. They compete for that trophy. We're certainly one of them. But we're in crunch time now. And now the pressure mounts even more, because at least if it's early in the year, you can say, okay, well, I can make that up. You know, we can make that up next weekend. Well, you know, especially with our team, because we bobbled the ball in the first couple of races in the countdown. Obviously had a great weekend last weekend going to the finals. There is no more, you know, next weekend for us. If we don't go into Dallas and we don't get a win final round, I don't think a semifinal cuts it for our team, to be honest with you. We're playing for second place. So, you know, we showed this season where we can go back to back with wins. And I said to my team, you know, we win the next two and we're the contender for the championship for the last two. And, you know, we've won at Bristol, we've won at Dallas, we've won at Vegas. I mean, our team knows how to win, and we are going to Dallas to come out with the trophy. That is our only option in our minds, is to win that race.
Yeah, it does make it easier when you know you have one job. It's just you got to go win, and that makes
go win. Ain't no first round, semifinals. Feel good about, you know, going to the semis. No, yeah. Our team has to leave with the trophy, and we almost did it in St. Louis. And I feel pretty sure that Mike Neff and John Schaefer, I got two of the very best, that we can go in there and do that.
What was it like for you with NHRA adopting a playoff system? Because, you know, I think of NASCAR, where drivers for so long, you raced a season and you put your points together and that was the championship. And then we went to a playoff system. NHRA kind of did the same thing. You would race and you put your points. And then it's like, well, here's this whole new ball game now of how we're going to decide a champion. What's that like for a driver when something new like that gets thrown at you?
Well, I mean, I think the most successful sport venues on the planet have playoffs. I mean, it's a logical thing. So fans and teams of every other successful sports, more successful than us, NFL, take for example, have a playoff. And it doesn't necessarily mean the best team of the season is going to win the Super Bowl. And I think that holds true here. The best team of the season may not win the championship in drag racing because of this format. But I think it heightens the pressure. It heightens the drama. It heightens, I think, the relevancy of these last handful of races, where in years past, people like Force and Schumacher and Torrance have run away with it. Like, we already knew who was going to win the championship before we were even in the last five races of the year. So I'm a big proponent of it. And I think you got to go out there and, you know, the table's set for all of us. We all have to operate off the same playbook and go out and win it, right? So it's going to be exciting, and we'll see where the chips fall.
Yeah, you alluded to it earlier. There's so much that goes on when you're getting ready, just leading into a run. And then It's 3, maybe 4 seconds of you going down that track. What do you process, Bob? What are you thinking about? What can you feel? How does it physically feel in those 3 to 4 seconds when you're making a run? Do you even process everything that's going on?
I mean, I can tell you the only thing I'm thinking about in that moment, you're not thinking about living or dying. You're thinking about winning. The only thing that I'm thinking about is winning, getting the car to the finish line, cutting a light, winning the race in that moment, to the point where, like, you know, I've been on fire and my foot's still wide open throttle. It's maybe a little scary, because it probably, you do some things that you shouldn't do. You push limits that you probably shouldn't push. But you don't care, because it's about winning the race for your sponsors, your fans, your team, your family. And I think the best drivers out there are able to truly immerse themselves in that thought only, and you go out there and win the race. Because if you're thinking about anything else, you know, who you're racing and anything else that goes through your mind other than winning, I think you're going to give yourself less of a chance to actually win that race.
You said there about being on fire. I was on YouTube. You've had some scary moments behind the wheel of that funny car. Are those the times where it's almost a little bit of a reminder of the power that you have underneath you? And it's just a reminder to respect that car and something like that you're driving, because it's powerful and it can overtake you if it wants to.
Yeah, I think that's the right word to use. You can't fear it, but you better respect it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, at the end of the day, if you don't respect it, well, at any given point, that car is quicker, faster than you'll ever be. And, you know, I've had my fair share of explosions and circumstances. And if you drive these cars long enough, it's going to happen. I don't care who you are.
Yeah.
I've seen the worst that this sport has had to offer. With lost some friends, dear friends, since I've been racing. But I've also seen what unbelievable engineering and safety that's been put in these cars over the years, that they've never been safer than they are now. But yeah, no, you're strapping into an 11,000 horsepower bomb that goes quicker and faster than anything on the planet that has a human being in it to 335 miles an hour. There's nothing on the planet that will outrun us in 1,000 feet than the cars we get in.
Yeah. So talking about 335 miles an hour, in my notes here, you were the first Ford driver to ever make a 3-second run.
Yeah.
You've eclipsed that since then. Like you said, you've been 335, but everybody has a story. You have to remember the first time you did it. So first off, do you remember the first time you just went 300 miles an hour and joined that club?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, those are moments you'll never forget. I mean, the one that stands out the most was I was the first Ford to break the 3-second barrier at 1,000 feet. That was in Chicago. It was on a Saturday night. I'll never forget it. And that was a big deal, because, you know, the Dodgers had did it. And I think Dell did it in a Toyota that same day. And then we were able to get it in the Ford, which is pretty tough to do when at the time John was running Fords. And that guy pretty much did everything first. But yeah, no, those are the moments. And, you know, I'm starting to relive it again with the electric program. So we're a big part of the electric program with Ford. A huge proponent of it. And I drive that electric Cobra Jet. And to have one of the quickest passes ever in an all electric car to a quarter mile at 8.1 seconds at over 170 miles an hour, I think I'm a historian of the sport. It's the only reason why I race, was the history of what my grandfather did. I found it so fascinating, all the landmarks they were able to eclipse. And to some extent, a lot of that has gone away with what we do, because we've really approached the limits of what Mother Nature will let us do in these nitro funny cars. But we're going to start to relive it with electric technology. And I'm just really excited to be on the forefront of it with Ford and their electric Cobra Jet program, which is going to expand. You know, NHRA has talked about an electric class that's coming in the future. And we're going to be able to see electric technology, and you heard it here first, okay, eclipse what we do in a nitro funny car. And you say to yourself, wait a second, you mean to tell me you're going to have an electric car go over 330 miles an hour in less than 3.8 seconds? And I'm here to say, yes, they are, they will. And they'll do it at a quarter mile and they'll step off the throttle and they probably won't even need parachutes to stop. So, you know, we're going to be able to be, have a front row seat. Hopefully I get to be behind the wheel of it and look at how electrification is going to really eclipse some of the all-time records that were set in our sport. It's not going to replace, let me be very clear, it's not replacing nitro funny cars. And that's what's awesome about NHRA, because they have pro stock motorcycle and pro stock and nitro funny car and nitro dragster. And you're going to have an electric class that's going to go out there, compete, and fans are going to be able to see, you know, the best of everything. But it is a pretty cool time to start to see what's going to happen with electrification. And I'm thrilled to be a part of it with Ford.
Yeah. All right. Well, I have you on the record. You've piqued my interest now. So I'm going
to. It's going to take a few years. I'm not saying it's going to happen next year, but before the end of the decade, I'm here to tell you that I think these things are going to outrun what nitro funny cars can do.
All right. Well, I'll mark it down. Like I said, it gives me something to look forward to. Speaking of that Cobra jet, that obviously resonates with your family, because wasn't it your grandfather who helped launch that back in the day? So when you're talking about doing the Cobra jet now, first off, it seemed like the fans really enjoyed it every time you all brought that out. But you also got to work with Tony Stewart, and it was fun to see the two of you go back and forth with that. What was that like from your perspective?
I guess I'm on a very short list of instructors that gave Tony Stewart driving lessons, but Tony has become a good friend of mine and obviously very extremely talented driver. But it was cool because, you know, everything that these cars do, a NASCAR can't do, an IndyCar can't do, and everything that they do, we can't. They're very different characteristics, and it requires a little different technique to be really good at it. And clearly Tony was able to pick up on it pretty quick, and he's coming after my record in that car. He may drive it in Las Vegas. I know I think I'm going to definitely drive it again in Las Vegas, which I think we have a real shot to improve on that record. And the reason is that people think about engines, right? The higher you go in altitude, the more difficult it is to make horsepower. Whereas an electric car, the higher you go in altitude, the thinner the air, the less resistance, the quicker it goes. It doesn't care if it's in Denver or if it's at sea level. So it'll be interesting to see what we can do with that electric Cobra jet in Las Vegas coming up here in about a month.
Oh, I'm excited. I didn't know it was coming back. I hadn't seen it for a while. So, all right, that's great. I look forward to that. Going back, Bob, we were talking a minute ago about that 3-second run and just 3 seconds in general. So physically, I can tell people as a fan, when I stand there at the starting line, this is what I feel like when those cars launch. For you behind the wheel, physically, what does that feel like to a driver when you're taking off in that funny car?
So I use two words to describe the funny car: aggressive and violent. Yeah. It's a very aggressive car. It's very violent. When you're outside of it, you hear a very sharp, high pitch, almost explosion. When you're in the car, we're in the valley of the energy. So when I hit the throttle, that sound and that energy is going, you know, out the exhaust pipes and you're accelerating forward. So we feel a tremendous amount of pressure. I tell people it's like the back seat of the car is trying to go through your body. There's so much pressure as it's accelerating forward and your chest is compressing. I actually feel the oxygen come out of my mouth. You know, your lungs compress as the car is accelerating and you can feel the energy, the vibration. We don't get the sound like you get because we're actually trying to outrun the sound in the car and we wear earplugs. So it's a very different tone. I can hear the motor very clear and I can hear the motor start to rev up as it's going down the racetrack. And then you really get the sense of speed. So I guess during that point, you feel the acceleration, the pressure. Then when the parachutes come out, you get the sense of speed because you feel the negative G-force. So you go from over 6 G's to negative 7.5 G's when the parachutes come out. So, you know, that's a 13 plus G swing in a matter of 3 seconds. And hence where the term violent comes from. It's a very violent experience as the car is accelerating. But it's hard to describe it because there's nothing that you can relate it to.
Exactly.
There's nothing that I can relate it to. And it happens so fast that it really is an extraordinary event that you go through.
That sense of speed that you just mentioned. I talked to Alexis DeGioia a month or two ago, and she was talking about, obviously, she stepped away. And when she came back, one of the things that took a minute is getting back acclimated to that speed again. You last year, unfortunately, were diagnosed with COVID. You missed a race. Yeah. Even just missing a short amount of time. Did that ever happen to you where you came back and said, oh, I'm going fast again, or did you not miss a beat?
Yeah, well, I think the more experience you have, I think there's brain waves that open up doing this thing that you'll never lose, but not so much for a week or two, but like when you take the off season off and you go out testing and you get in that car after taking 2 months off, man, I tell you one thing, oof, it's fast. I mean, it really, at that point, it'll hit you. But it's interesting, though, because I'll tell you a funny story. When I first started driving, my crew chief was Chris Cunningham, great guy. He would get upset with me that I'm shutting the car off too late, like I was past the finish line. And I remember him showing me on the computer, and you should be stepping off here. And I finally said, Chris, let's come outside and show me on the ground how far distance-wise. And, you know, I don't know, maybe it was, you know, 80 feet after the finish line. And I said to him, I said, Chris, I'm thrilled. I'm like, I'm happy about that. He goes, well, why are you happy? I said, Chris, I don't even see the finish line. I don't even see it. I don't even know that the finish line went by. And it's like, you just step off the throttle because you just step off the throttle. Now, you know, years later, within thousands of a second, you know, within a handful of thousands of a second, I step off the throttle every single time. And it's like almost slow motion. It's hard to explain to you how you can be going 300 plus miles an hour and it's like slow motion, but it's like slow motion. That finish line comes up and I know exactly where I am and when to step off the throttle. And that just takes years of kind of building up to what we do, because what people don't realize, it's not the 330 miles an hour that you have to adapt to. Really isn't. I mean, heck, you go faster than that in an airplane, right? It's the acceleration rate. It's the fact that we can go a football field in a half second. And that is what makes what we do so remarkable. And even like a guy like Tony Stewart, with all of his experience and driving experience, he didn't get into a nitro dragster and take it to the finish line the first time. You just would never do it. You would never do it because you need to give yourself, your brain, the opportunity to speed up and get acclimated to that acceleration rate, or you can get yourself in a lot of trouble.
That's probably why, again, it makes sense of what you guys do. And there's so much you're doing behind the wheel, where for me, I'm just fascinated again that you make that run. You're not only driving the car, but you gotta, like you said, you gotta know when to take your foot off the throttle. You gotta the parachutes. So there's just so much going on. And to me, it just doesn't make sense that you can do all that and go that fast. But like you said, I guess for you, it becomes slow motion after a while when you do it for so long. It's fascinating to me.
And the greatest part of the whole run, the greatest part is when the parachutes hit. I can tell you right now, John Force said that to me years ago. And I'm like, well, how can that be great? The run's over, John. He goes, kid, when those parachutes come out, you know that you'll live to fight another day, because, you know, without those chutes on some of these racetracks, you got your hands full stopping these race cars at 330 plus miles an hour. And those chutes become a wonderful feeling.
Yeah. I think it was at Maple Grove when I was up there, Clay Milken's chutes didn't come out or something. Yeah. I said, my gosh, that has to be just a helpless feeling of.
Oh yeah. No, it's not helpless. You're pulling that brake as hard as you can, doing everything in your power to slow that car down. And at 1,000 feet, that was one of the big reasons why NHRA did it. It's really made it a lot safer for the drivers. Not when everything goes right. When everything goes right, you can go to half mile. It's when things go wrong and how we stop these cars, giving us that extra 320 feet was a big deal.
Yeah. So going back, Bob, again, to when you first get into racing, of course, racing is nothing that's new for your family. You mentioned your grandfather and your father. When you wanted to go racing, though, was it something to where it was just a natural thing for you to want to do? Or did you have to convince anybody? Did you have to prove yourself to let them kind of give you the okay?
Oh, I think you can't fake this, right? There's some things you can do in life and you can probably get through it faking it. You can't fake doing what we do. And that goes for any racer, not just someone who drives a nitro car. So for me, my family, you know, I started driving go-karts and then they got into Mustangs. Just so my first time ever down a racetrack was in a 1992 Mustang GT, and it was a little souped up and went 13 seconds and, you know, then built up faster from there, got into some pro stock cars, super gas cars with Roy Hill, pro stock cars. I drove a mountain motor car with Roy and then got into an alcohol funny car. So I think all along the way, I had to prove to myself first, right? Because at the end of the day, you're the one that's in the car that I could do this, that I could compete at a high level. I wouldn't want to do it if I couldn't compete at a high level as a driver. And then Ford Motor Company and, you know, different sponsors along the way took note and said, hey, this is a guy that can, you know, represent our brand, our sponsors, speak in front of a camera, and also is a not too bad behind that steering wheel. So yeah, no, I think all along the way, and I think I'm still proving to myself and sponsors that I can do this at a high level. You know, I never take for granted that I get it. I mean, you know, last week I'm working on things to make my reaction times better. And I'm never the type of just resting back on my laurels and said, okay, I made it. And let's just see what next race brings. I mean, every time I get in that car, I want to do better. And I want to prove to people why we can go out there and win a championship.
Yeah. And again, you're in your office. So I'm curious, what does a week look like for you when maybe you're going to the racetrack later in the week, but you're in the office, you're taking care of the automotive group. What do you handle from 9 to 5? What's that look like?
Yeah, well, I guess that's what a lot of people don't know about me. I'm a wall-to-wall guy. I'm a 24/7 guy. I spent 4 nights in my bed tonight in September. We have stores all over the country. So in between stores, I'll fly to locations and meet with the general managers. I'm working on deals, new acquisitions. We probably got 5 or 6 more acquisitions lined up between now and into next year. So I'm working aggressively on those. And then, you know, I spend my time in places that probably some of my management team, you know, when you're on the phone with me, other than my monthly report out calls and some weekly normal calls that I have, it's probably not a good situation because I got to spend my time in the areas that need attention. And, you know, with our company, we have great metrics that we hold all of our stores to. I think we have 13, 14 rooftops. I don't even count anymore, but we have metrics that we want the stores to run within. We have general managers that are empowered to do that. And when we have stores that aren't performing the way they need to, well, then I'm getting involved. I'm getting involved with me, and normally one of my cousins are involved with me on those calls. So I'm putting my time where it's best utilized. And if things are going good, then you're not going to hear from me. If things aren't going good, you're going to probably hear from me more than you care to. And then I like to be places. So, you know, people don't necessarily know I'm an avid pilot. I've been a pilot for many years. I fly our company airplane, and that gives me the tools that I need to be wherever I need to be, whenever I need to be there. And that's been a big part of our growth strategy, because you have to be there. You know, someone told me just this week, you know, half of the battle is being there, like being in the moment, being there with your team. That's half of it. And these Zoom calls are great, but I like to be there, and you know, I'm able to do that. So yeah, and then I sit on a couple of boards. I sit on a product board with Ford Motor Company, which I cherish that, being involved with the future product strategy for Ford. And then I sit on a couple other boards that keep me busy throughout the year. So if you want to hang with me, you're going to be moving. You're going to be on the road. You're going to be going racing for some. Some drivers, that's all they do. It's their full-time job, and they take some downtime in between races. That's not me. I'm 20. I mean, literally, I'm at the track. You know, probably I would be willing to bet I'm the first driver at the racetrack early in the morning, working out of my lounge. I have an office on the road. And then around noontime, I shut the computer off and I go from, you know, dealership Tasca to racing Tasca. And that's what I love to do.
I did read about you being an avid pilot. I think I was on Instagram and it was a while back, but you were jumping off a cliff somewhere because the caption said your kids didn't think you would do it. And plus race car driver. So you just strike me, Bob, as someone that needs an adrenaline rush.
Yeah, no, I never done any form of drugs in my entire life, but I guess you could say I am addicted to adrenaline and, you know, I don't know, just pushing yourself to the limit. And that's not just physically, But that's mentally and challenging yourself, whether it's in business or in racing. It's, I don't know, it's inside me. It'll never leave me. It'll always be part of who I am. And, you know, I think the people that are around me every day, the management team, my race team, I think some of my energy can be infectious because it's about winning. I want to win, whether I'm in the car dealership, in the race car, knowing that you lose more than you win, right? So, you know, racing, you lose more than you win. But the difference is that you have to be able to leave the bad behind every weekend, take the good with you. And the next time you get in that car, the next race you roll into, you got to have that same fire, that same passion, that same determination and desire to go out there and tear their heads off. You know, you just have that aggressive nature to just go in there and compete. And that's what I love to do.
Yeah. So the automotive group is based up in the Northeast in yep. Rhode Island. Where is the race team there as well? Or how does that work?
Yeah. So the auto group's based out of Rhode Island. The race team's based out of Indianapolis. But we got several stores in Illinois with more to come. We have stores in Florida with more to come. We have a Ford store in Connecticut, a Ford store in Massachusetts. We have our big Ford stores here in Rhode Island. So, you know, we've really kind of ventured out across the country, but our race base is in Indianapolis.
Does that make it difficult whenever you're needed there? Or as you said, you're in pilot, so you can just get yourself there?
Yeah, well, the interesting thing is that people say, how often do you go to the race shop? I said, very rarely, because we meet on the road. Like, I'll go in the off season a couple of times when everyone's back in Indy, but otherwise, everyone that I want to talk to is with me for literally 4 days. So, you know, there's nothing that we can't do with racing. The racing is really the easiest thing to stay on top of because it's relatively small. You know, it's a smaller group compared to what I'm used to working with. And I'm literally with these guys in the locker room with them for 3 straight days. The dealerships is where, you know, they're much bigger organizations, a lot more moving pieces, where I like to at least once a month, I touch a lot of the big stores, either me or one of my cousins or brothers will touch one of the big stores throughout the course of a month.
Yeah. So anybody in racing, even if you're a race fan, has probably heard the slogan, win on Sunday, sell on Monday. But from what I understand, what I was reading is you're saying that was coined by your grandfather.
100%. Yeah. My grandfather coined win on Sunday, sell on Monday. And that's alive and well today. I mean, our sponsors on our race cars without an ROI. They need a return on investment. It has changed dramatically on how we do that with activation and technician recruiting and, you know, a source of other things over and above what I call the 300 mile per hour billboard. Because if it's just the 300 mile per hour billboard, you will never be able to raise the funding to run one of these cars. It has to be a much more cohesive package. A lot of B2B relationships in these sponsors. And when you do that effectively, you can go out and raise the funds necessary to compete at the highest level in the class that we run in.
There's another task of family commitment, which is you will be satisfied.
Yeah, you've done your homework. Yes, you have.
Not only that, I actually got the book.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's all. Yeah. So my grandfather coined that phrase. He used that. I'll tell you the ending of it. He says, you will be satisfied if we can't fix it. We'll either fix it, replace it, or burn it, bring the matches. And that's really our whole company, our auto group, is built around that slogan. You will be satisfied. And we empower from the very lowest level in our company, all the way up, obviously, to my father and uncles. If it hits my father's desk, if it's going to cost us 10 times what it would cost if it was just handled at the service desk. So, no, we're very proud about that statement. And, you know, we run some of the very best customer satisfaction stores in the country.
I was looking at pictures and I don't think it was your funny car. I think it was your alcohol car that slogan was on the front of it at one point.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. It was on my alcohol funny car. Yeah, you will be satisfied on it.
Yeah. Well, I'm not a top salesman of cars, but I'm looking forward to reading the book. I've been told it was a good read.
You'll enjoy it.
How beneficial, Bob, for you has it been in life to be surrounded or sitting under that learning tree of your dad and your grandfather and to pick up on lessons like this?
Yeah, it's, you know, I have the pleasure of speaking to over 30,000 high schools a year on behalf of NHRA's YES program and Ford Motor Company. And it's a technician pitch on how great it is. But I lead into three things about being successful in life. And the first one you just touched on is I tell these young kids, be responsible with your time. And I'm not here to talk about drugs and alcohol. If they haven't figured that out by now, they're probably already in trouble. But who you spend your time with, right? So you can wake up each and every day and you can go hang out with the unsuccessful people, or you can hang out with successful people. And you can ask successful people great questions. And my grandfather said, remember the answers. He said, you know, surround yourself with people that win, ask them great questions and remember the answers. And, you know, I've been blessed in my life to have been surrounded by so many incredible people, and I've asked great questions and I've remembered the answers, and it's been a blessing for me, and I've taken advantage of it. You know, a lot of people in positions of, I guess you could say, influence can throw those opportunities away, but I never wanted to do that. I wanted to really learn from the people around me and figure out how I could be even better, right? Not saying I could, because some of the people I've met, I'll never achieve what they've achieved. But I'm going to try. I'm going to try to learn from the best and figure out how I can be better. In a lot of cases, you know, that's been a huge part of my success. The second thing is work ethic. My grandfather left us with a tremendous work ethic. I tell kids, work hard, play hard. Everyone's heard that saying, make sure you work harder than you play, because there's absolutely no compromise for a great work ethic. And then the last thing that I was always taught, have goals in life. But the truth with that is that's a misleading statement, because a goal without a plan is a wish. And I don't wake up every day wishing, okay? I wake up doing. And if you want to achieve your goals, make sure you have a good plan. What's your plan? What's your strategy? Because plan B in life sucks, Kelly. I don't like plan B. I don't talk about plan B. I don't think about plan B. I think about plan A. I may have a couple of plan A's, maybe not just one plan A, but I'm not going to accept plan B. Those are things that the closest people to me in my life have instilled. And I've had the opportunity now as I've gotten older. I feel older than I am, but I have gotten older and been able to share some of those, you know, learning lessons with the younger generation, my own children, and the people I get to interact with, because I want to pass on some of those, you know, traits that I've been able to learn from people around me.
Yeah. It's funny. You just mentioned your children. You've got four boys. And that reminds me of, I was watching coverage one weekend and it seems like you guys were traveling in a pack because they were showing the boys. And I guess they were, Alan Reinhart was joking, they were trying to get in Tony Stewart's head because you had a pack with you.
Hey, listen, you know, I have to trade quantity of time with my kids with quality time with my kids because of how much I travel. But I do during the West Coast swing, we take a week as a family. We've been doing it since the kids, before some of them were even born, and we just go together. We just get on the airplane, we head out west, and we'll take a little vacation in between Denver and Sonoma or Sonoma and Seattle, and they'll hit two races with me, and it's just a great time. They've been around racing their whole life. They love it. So it's fun. But yeah, no, you need to do that. For anyone that's on the road traveling as much as we are, you got to find that family time when you can. And, you know, kind of, I've always wrapped it into something I'm doing in business, whether it's a business trip or a race. We always find some time to spend time together.
That's awesome. Two more things for you, Bob, as we wrap up here. And keeping talking about the dealerships and the 9-to-5 job, going back to how we were talking earlier about, you know, if you have a bad run or you want to do something different, you got to wait. So having the dealerships, does that almost help serve as a distraction from those weekends to where you don't have time to dwell on it because Monday morning you got to get back to work?
Yeah, you know, it's hard though. It's hard. You know, you put everything in on a weekend, and if you lose and it's your fault as a driver, or you lose because we just lost as a team, it's tough. It's tough because it matters, right? It's tough because it matters. If something in life doesn't matter, it doesn't matter. If it didn't work out, it didn't affect you. So I need a little decompression time, and maybe it's getting in that airplane and flying home, and you just need a little bit of time. But then I flip the switch And I've gotten better at that because mentally it can be debilitating. I mean, if you dwell on a failure, whether it be racing or in business, right? Because not everything I've touched has been gold in business either. So you need to be able to reflect on it. You need to be able to learn from it. It affects you because it mattered a lot. And then you've got to be able to move on. And you got to be able to flip that switch and not look back. And I think I've gotten much better at that as I've gotten older, both in racing and in business. But if you can't do it, you know, whether it's in business or racing, it can be debilitating and ultimately be a downfall in whatever venture you may be on. So no, I've been able to flip that switch. And definitely, you know, when I leave the racetrack, I mean, you know, people will laugh. If you come to the pit 45 minutes after the race is over, I'm gone. You know, I'm gone and I'm getting back. And if I can get back to the dealership early enough Sunday, I go to work. Like literally, I'll go to work and, you know, get some work done because I got a lot to do. I got a lot to do and I get a lot of people that rely on me and I got to perform both at the racetrack and outside the racetrack. And I think it does help me maybe, you know, move past it.
Yeah. Let me wrap it up with this. I think drag racing, again, is one of the most exciting forms of sports that we see. For you, what is the most exciting thing about drag racing?
The most exciting thing about drag racing, oh man, I think the most exciting thing about what we do is that you'll never forget it. Like I tell people that you may not like it, but you will never go to a drag race and forget that experience and see how awesome harnessing this power as best we can sometimes, exploding at the starting line and then charging down the racetrack at over 335 miles an hour. It's truly a spectacle that you will never forget. The smell, the sound, the energy, it touches every sense that you have. And it's you know, that's probably the most exciting thing is just it's so memorable, and the experience is so personal because you get to interact with us when we're not on the racetrack. You can come back and see us in the pits. Those two elements are probably what's most exciting about drag racing.
Yeah, absolutely, Bob. I appreciate the time so much. Thank you for agreeing to do this.
My pleasure.
I enjoyed it so much. Thank you.
Thank you. Come say hello next time you're at a drag trip.
My thanks again to Bob for just a tremendous conversation. I really, really enjoyed it. I thought he shared a lot of great insight into what it's like to, well, kind of be a little crazy. I guess you have to be if you're going to go 3 seconds at over 300 miles an hour with that much power underneath you, as he talked to us about. So thanks again to Bob for coming on the podcast. Congratulations on ending the year on a high note, as I said, winning the Wally in Pomona, California. And I know that team will be ready to go in 2022 as they continue to chase a championship. My thanks as well to Dan Zacharias from Ford for helping come up with this idea and make it happen, as well as Matt Trevor from Ford and Motorcraft, who helps get Bob on the schedule and make this conversation happen. My thanks to you, as always, for clicking and listening along. I hope you enjoyed this episode and learned something new as we deviated away from stock cars and NASCAR. The NHRA is phenomenal. I've said it before, but let me tell you once again, I'm having a great time going over there, learning the personalities, telling some new stories, working with new people. It is a tremendous form of racing to watch. It is so entertaining once you get to know it and experience it. So I appreciate all of you being interested in learning along with me and clicking today's episode and learning more about drag racing, as well as Bob and Bob Tasca's family. What a history, what a cool story, and I hope you enjoyed it. Please leave a rating and review to let me know if you did enjoy it. Let me know what you think. You can do that here and wherever you are listening to this podcast. You can also subscribe if you're finding us for the first time, and you will have new episodes in your feed every Monday morning. And of course, you can reach out and let me know on social media through Twitter, where my handle is at Kelly Crandall. Look for the public Facebook page. If Facebook is your preferred social media platform, you will find links to the podcast as well as for racer.com. And you can also follow me on Instagram if you're as addicted to that platform as I am. You can find me there and interact with me on racing adventures, books, and anything else that's going on. So Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, And of course, bookmarkracer.com. You can find the podcast there as well as everything you need to know about NASCAR and NHRA when I go and dabble into that world. Before I let you go for this week, a reminder that you can also find more content for the podcast as well as an additional way to support me through Patreon. The link to that page is in the show description of this episode. It is also on social media if you follow me there. I appreciate everyone's support. It really, truly goes a long, long way. So please go look at patreon.com/KellyCrandall to learn more about the podcast, get more unique content for the podcast, and find another way to support me. And I, again, appreciate that very much. Next week, a new episode will be in your feed on Monday morning, as I said. It's going to be Brian Wilson and Harrison Burton. That's the duo for the Wood Brothers Racing number 21 Cup car. Harrison Burton's going Cup racing. 2022 will be his rookie season. And Brian Wilson is going to be his crew chief, Brian being promoted from the Xfinity Series, where he spent the last couple years working with Austin Cindric. Brian and Harrison were kind enough to sit down with me together through Zoom, so you're getting two guests in one. We're going to talk about their relationship and their plans for 2022, growing that chemistry approach to next gen and just being in the Cup Series. So that will be coming your way next week right here on the Racing Writers Podcast.